Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan present Point Taken, a podcast connecting you to the sports and pop culture issues you care about and the guests you want to hear more from. Now, here's Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 6. Time flies when you're having fun. Exciting episode coming up. Ron McLean is going to stop by. He's finally on vacation. I guess we're just going to make him work.
It's a quiet summer for him. He was in Brazil last year. That takes a lot of prep. That takes a lot of wind down. I don't know if he's tied up to with the Russia World Cup next year. But busy, busy human being. And he was busier this year being back on Saturday nights. We all got goosebumps when we saw that. I did, seeing the, him, the commercial where he just sits in the chair.
That was very well
It was very
done.
Well shot. You know, not every Sportsnet ad can be like the two Blue Jays fans sitting there who live together or whatever. How will you ever match?
I do.
Well, they did that with Ron. They hit maximum emotion with that one. Exactly.
I do always want to eat Cheetos though when I see that commercial
with them specifically.
Cheetos. No, just by myself.
Who are those people? Actors or are they? I feel bad if I'll see
fans.
Them at a party.
They're you. They're
That's right.
You and I. You
they're,
and me.
They're you and I.
You know
and,
what? We do eat games. Cheetos at work though. Someone last night at work brought in, and I'm trying to be healthy right now. One of the producers, Ryan Moynes, he ran across the street. There's a grocery store right across the street and brought in about 4 bags of chips. And that just completely
and
changed
it's
the course
of
my
you
night.
Late night, right? Like
yeah,
that's what I don't miss
salt.
About. Yeah. That's what I don't miss about either broadcasting OHL games or having an evening shift. I find the moon comes out and your eating habits go to hell in a handbasket
so
in a big
true.
Hurry.
Look at me. I brought a healthy smoothie to.
That's very good. I've avoided any sort of dough products driving in the morning at 4:30. So I think you're either going to eat terribly in the first 2 hours you wake up or the last 2 or 3 hours before. If you can avoid all that, you're good. Now are you getting into a plan because last week was so. Did you go off plan in Vancouver? Because when we spoke to you last,
yes.
You were on the phone. You were talking to J.D. Bunkus. You're going to walk along the seawall or whatever. You're biking. You're walking uphill, downhill, walking backwards,
both
walking
ways.
Forwards, crawling. You're doing everything.
So no, I actually had a very active week, but I'm just trying to get back into a routine. I'm a creature of habit. I'm like a child. I like to have structure.
and
you're
so,
trying to get in shape though, aren't you?
Well, I just want to look a little bit better. We're basically on a beach like for an entire week with family too. And well, who's more judgy than your own family, than your own two younger sisters and
oh,
their husbands?
Okay. That's so true. I have two older brothers and those poor guys.
But it's not like a body, like my in-law, my brothers-in-law. It's not like some kind of bodybuilding contest. We're not doing flexing showdowns.
Not officially, but
no,
it
not
sounds,
really.
Sounds like something's going on.
But you feel, yeah, you feel, you know, you don't want to be that, and you don't want to be that person that you're just like, oh, you know, to my wife, you're like, Rachel, you look great and everything. And Greg, hey, you know, you want a similar compliment, I suppose, to some extent. Now you were at also, oh, my goodness, we tried to get you in trouble with you were headed when we spoke to a Rogers Radio launch party. So I love the now you probably won't have any gossip, but this is the place to spill it if you do.
So it was the Sportsnet 650 launch party, which is the new radio station that is launching in
very soon, September.
Vancouver. Yeah, I believe it's Labor Day weekend.
With the Vancouver Canucks games.
Yes.
So if you ever wanted to hear what a 29th place team, if you've never listened to the Leafs before, the last few seasons before this one.
And I told you and JD that I was going for the food. Well, and I mean, I was going because I was invited.
It
and
was
it's always
fully
good
catered.
To go.
It was at the arena.
There were tacos. I had tacos. They had chocolate chip cookies. There were drinks. It was very nice. It was it was nice for me because I was able to see different people in Vancouver, even from the sales team. People I used to see in my building at work, but I don't see anymore. I really don't have much gossip, though.
Were there Canucks players there?
No, Trevor Linden was there. And I just briefly said hello to him. Speaking of fitness, he is Mr. Fit in Vancouver. He has gyms and he's cycling everywhere.
He can't win because then disgruntled Canucks fans are like, stop working out so much and make a trade or something. And it's
no,
like
they
you
like
mix
Linden
that into
too much.
The part of your life. Really? So none of the problems of the last couple of years has sort of hit him yet. I know that's the problem with having an iconic player. Like I would
that's
say,
the point.
Can you imagine if a Doug Gilmore, Wendell Clark was the GM here and you didn't like something he did? Like with Lou Lamoriello, it's a little easier. It really is.
It's a good point.
So you don't ever want, when I was a kid, Alan Trammell was one of my favorite baseball players. And then he came and managed the Tigers. And they were terrible when I lived and worked in Detroit. And then he got fired after two seasons and never managed to get in the big leagues. And you're like, you don't want to see. I mean, not that Wayne Gretzky ever played for the Arizona Coyotes, but it must have pained some people to watch the great Wayne Gretzky coach a bad hockey team.
I feel like people purposefully forget he did that, too. They push it out of their minds.
A little. Well, I mean,
talked about.
You don't ask Wayne Gretzky when you have him on, like, are you going to coach again? Because you know
no.
he isn't.
You ask about his new winery.
You could ask about that or being, you know, hanging out in Edmonton more and there being a bit more of a buzz. So since also last we talked, do you have any reflections on the NBA end of season? Because now there's you would have had a big night last night on Sportsnet Central. There's a Kyle Lowry tweet. There's rumors he doesn't want to come here. He says don't listen to that. There's talk about Paul George trades. There's Cavs GMs getting fired. The NBA, nothing's more exciting than the NBA offseason. Like, I'm good with some of the NHL stuff that happens, and you got the added bonus of an expansion draft.
Right.
But there's nothing. I mean, the number one pick got traded for the number three pick and some futures. And if that happened in the NHL, the hockey puck person mind would explode, right?
Right, but everyone right now in the NBA is so focused on what's fresh. So how is anyone going to beat the Warriors and how is anyone in the East going to come close to the Cavs? And if the Cavs do get, say, a Jimmy Butler or a Paul George, I mean, even the Raptors, Masai Ujiri will try and add some pieces whether or not Kyle Lowry re-signs. But realistically, as a GM, are you going to try and win in the next 3 years? I feel like the 76ers, and again, that, I mean, it's making news, but it's not huge news. They're going to be stacked with young talent. And in 4 or 5 years from now, when the Warriors are getting older, when LeBron's getting old, when those teams aren't as dominant, you're going to have the young teams like the 76ers. And I think that's what GMs need to do right now is get those young picks and build for down the road. Don't build for right now because you're not going to compete with these teams. I mean, injuries and health always. I mean, who knows if there was a severe injury to the Cavs, to LeBron, to the Warriors, it could change. But
yeah, LeBron's never,
you never
hurt.
Know.
And within a year, though, if I'm the Raptors and I take the information since our last podcast in the last week or so, thinking LeBron has his eye on Los Angeles, hearing, you know, he's got a Hollywood production company there. We all know he was in that Amy Schumer movie. Maybe he wants to keep it. Now, will he ever play a character other than LeBron James? I don't know. That could be really interesting
you know
if that happens. I don't
know. There is a headline, though, and it said something like, LeBron James's wife would prefer to live full-time in L.A. over Cleveland. And I thought, wouldn't it be more news if she wanted to live in Cleveland more full-time? It's L.A.
That's right.
It's the beach. They have a nice mansion.
Yes. There's traffic.
No offense to
Cleveland. There's traffic, and you don't get the change of seasons, and you can't build a snowman. And they may fall into the ocean in the next 10 years, but
minor semantics.
So, but if you knew if you're the Raptors that LeBron was going to leave to go to the Western Conference and you say, well, obviously our goal is to go to the NBA Finals, then I think you're more inclined to, I want to them to bring the whole band back together anyway. And it's not my money, but they have to spend to a certain threshold. So you would offer Kyle Lowry a max deal. Yes, you would offer Serge Ibaka close to that. And you'd bring as many parts from last year as you can. They still won 51 games. They were bruised and battered by the time the playoffs came. If you knew you could wait out LeBron one more year.
Is it just going to be one?
I'm counting on him leaving after one year.
Okay.
Yeah, I really am. I think he finishes his career on the West Coast. Sure,
I still think it's dangerous if you sign Kyle Lowry because you're signing him for now and the tail end of that contract, you don't know what you're going
to like
get.
You won't like it, but especially if they want to, it all seems to be, I mean, you're staying up late watching these games, so am I. You're doing the highlights and you just see three-pointers. Like, when someone's cutting highlights, you're like, can we get a non-three-point? You can't get a non-three-pointer in the highlight pack from a Golden State-Cleveland NBA Finals game because they're shooting so many of them. So if it's not Kyle Lowry shooting the three-pointers, who is for the Raptors? Because we know DeMar DeRozan's more a slasher, more a mid-range jumper, loves to get his points from the free throw line. He's great when he gets there. But outside shot is that's what you, because Terrence Ross is gone. That's what you count on Kyle Lowry for.
But the thing with the Warriors and the Cavs is that they always make the extra, not just pass, but two or three passes. So they have sharp shooters who are getting open shots because they have a style of play that allows that. That's more also what the Raptors need to do. So whether that's from coaching and changing your plan, or also from getting the right players. They need to move the ball around more.
Yeah.
And so, get Kyle and DeMar
that's
the
right.
open shots.
So we'll be here together for the next few Point Taken podcasts. That said, I did want to note, you were always sort of on deck to travel to a Grand Slam tennis tournament in case, like, if with Wimbledon upcoming, how far do either Raonic or Jeannie Bouchard have to go for you to be on standby? You still had a packed suitcase last time you were in studio with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, I unpacked it.
Very in tears
yeah.
from the French, because
well,
you really wanted to go to
talk
Paris.
About it.
I know that. I know. So what would have to happen? Quarterfinals?
I don't know. I actually haven't checked with the bosses. I would I should do that. I think I sent an email out. I would assume quarterfinals.
You're asking to go.
Last
they don't
year
you
was
don't
semifinals.
Wait to get asked. You're
I
asking.
Sent an email. I'm just waiting to hear. I think my manager was on vacation. I'll put that in my to-do list. Thank you for reminding me.
But when do we get to you being there for all 2 weeks? Because that's what you'd like at this point.
I mean, sure.
It's a lot of fun.
But I don't think, I mean, you have to think of cost. It is a business.
No,
you don't have to think
how about
cost.
A sponsor handle you
yeah,
know,
if
your
anyone's,
reports?
If anyone's listening and you'd like to sponsor me to go to Wimbledon, we can do that, right? Sales department doesn't
makes
mind
perfect
us
sense,
doing
no.
this over a podcast.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's totally fine.
The Boston Pizza Wimbledon report with Carolyn
Cameron. The Cheeto report.
Yeah, well, you'd eat better than that over there. They have that all-day breakfast in that Wimbledon. Now, that's probably changed. I haven't been there in, like, 19 years.
All-day breakfast?
They would serve an all-day breakfast, so I would get the traditional.
For media?
No, I had to pay for it. I went in, like, what was sort of maybe the players. I bet you it's all changed.
I think, no, media, I think you still have to pay.
But
I
my think. English breakfast daily was scrambled eggs, sausage. You know how they do the baked beans with breakfast? And I don't know. I wouldn't do that now. Ooh. I wouldn't have as many baked beans as I had
that's
in a 2 week
span. That's not a good
span.
Idea before you
And then you
got to
ride
go
the you got to ride the tube back
no,
with the
thanks.
Baked beans.
It's warm
nobody,
out.
Nobody wants to ride next to the guy
so
in the train
is not
with the baked
your,
beans.
This is not your diet right now for the Brady family
no,
vacation
but I'm avoiding
fitness challenge?
Pastries, bread products of any kind. They always told you when you're younger, eat a lot of bread. And I think my mom and ever the mom from the 80s had that wrong. I think bread is just extra caking for your organs.
So good.
It feels good. So Ron McLean's going to join us in a little bit. Then we'll return to what up with that. We've got several stories we're going to lob back and forth.
Including a man swimming against a shark, racing a shark.
But not just
How's
any
that
man.
For a tease?
Well, it could be just any shark.
That's
I don't think
true.
That there's not like a
it's
shark playdowns to... There's not like an elimination double knockout tournament. There's not like a challenge ladder.
Not that I'm aware of, but
like
now I'll look
it up. Like at your local tennis club. So that makes perfect sense. Well, up next on Sportsnet's Point Taken podcast, we're very pleased to have the voice, the face of not just Hockey Night in Canada, but Rogers Hometown Hockey as well, which will head into year number 4 next season. He is, of course, you know him, you love him, Gemini Award winner as well, Ron McLean. You are finally grounded after a exhausting run of things, aren't you? You're happy to be in the same time zone and area code that we're actually in.
You know, it's funny, Greg and Carolyn, you almost enter a depression. And I remember experiencing this even, I can remember 1999 after we came home from Dallas and I kind of fell into just a funk for about a week. Alex Despatie and I were talking about it during the Rio Olympics last year, and that's the kind of year it was. We went right from Rio de Janeiro. 6 days later, we had the first exhibition game of the World Cup, and we never stopped, right? We just kept going for 11 months on adrenaline. Alex said after London, he couldn't leave his home in Montreal and go out for almost 3 weeks. And he had a big corporate sponsorship event on the 17th day after London. And his agent said, Alex, you've got to. You know, they've been so good to you all these years. You've got to get out of your bedroom and you've got to go to this event. And that kind of shook him out of it. So like Mother Teresa always said, if you want to help yourself, help someone. But you really have to get out of your room. But I feel like every time I come home from that long run, you're just kind of bleak. So you're going to get the darkest of me.
So that's what the audience wants.
Do you take a bit of a break from hockey then with the draft this week? Or do you just kind of watch from afar?
Unfortunately, I'm going to be at U2 on Friday night. So
Ooh.
The draft, the first round. I'll have to PVR and watch it Saturday because I'm also at a little musical event on Saturday evening. Taz Winery in Niagara has an annual summer solstice party. Jim Cuddy has the lead on that. So I'm going to go and help Dave Hodge. It's funny. Dave Hodge, who hosted Hockey Night for 16 years before I hosted it, he and I are there every year and we take turns. One will introduce Jim Cuddy and the other the warm-up act or vice versa. So I'll see Dave again this weekend. But no, nothing for me, Carolyn, as far as the draft or the NHL awards this year.
Yeah, quieter summer without, you know, no World Cup of Soccer, no Summer Olympics. I hope you know, and I want to know if you could feel it from afar, or just it took you getting back on Canadian soil to realize it. You introducing the Hip Show last year on the Saturday night, so many people have probably asked you about it. We already know what the unbelievable ratings were for it. Going into it, coming out of it, there just wasn't more perfect television than that. I say that because there were no commercials, and everyone's probably right. Like, yes, mm-hmm. No one likes commercials. But did you get that feeling at the time? You're like, this could go a bunch of different ways, and then it went as it did.
It was, you know, Greg, so many things about that. I saw the first show in Victoria of the tour, so I actually experienced live the first time Gord Downie stepped onto the stage, and we would get to see what he appeared like, what he sounded like, what song he would choose, and it was Boots or Hearts. The way they did that tour was interesting. They would play four songs from an album. They felt that if they stuck to an album for four songs, it would help Gord, whose memory was now suffering. It would be familiar with him to stay on fully, completely for four songs and then maybe move to another album. Anyway, I saw that show, and that began, you know, at least I felt a great connection. I went back to the Empress Hotel in Victoria and had beers with Gord and his brother Patrick, and spent a lot of time with various members of the band. And that was a nice, you know, feeling. It's always somehow better to not do something without having had a connection, a recent connection. So when I flipped from there, the following day I flew back to Toronto, and then the day after that down to Rio de Janeiro for the Olympics, and worked the whole Olympics for whatever it takes us, approximately 3.5-4 weeks. Came to that last show, and for me it was the end of a long day, because I was doing the morning run, which meant I was on the air at, I was leaving the hotel at 3:30 in the morning to do my show, and I had to introduce the Hip at about 9 at night, so it's a long day. And I realized about 90 seconds, and I can remember the funny things that happened. The producers in Toronto said, "Hey, Ron, is it okay if Scott Russell explains the geography, that they're at Market Square in Kingston, there's a crowd outside the venue, and that this," because that's what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was taken away from me, like about 7 seconds to the time they're going to bring it to me. So I thought, that's okay. I've got lots of Olympians around me. But then I thought, cripes, who do I have around me? And I'm looking, and it's Manny Bujold is a boxer from Kitchener, and a few of the swimmers I recognized, but I had to kind of bluff my way for a few seconds because I had 90 seconds and I had just lost what I thought was going to be about 15 to 20 of it. You know the drill. So I then get to my sort of messaging, which was going to be, this is all about catharsis, this is all about the human condition, Samuel Johnson, and I want to quote to you from my favorite song, The Wherewithal. And the lyric in the song, the actual lyric is, "I always loved that guy, he's not on TV anymore, to get out before he had the wherewithal. But when I did it to air, I said, I always loved that guy, he's not on TV anymore, he had the wherewithal to get out before." So I reversed the last five words. And no one would know, and it's not a, you know, familiar song, it's not like butchering Blow High Dough, but it was just a moment of, you know, where you just freeze into yourself and think, good God, I have said that 2 billion times, and now, you know, in the moment of truth, while everybody thought I had done a masterful job, I recognized I'd kind of kicked it around. No one would ever know, and I finished my thought, and I introduced the five members, because I had sort of Olympians to introduce,
yeah,
the members
mm-hmm.
of the band to introduce, the name of the frickin' presentation to introduce. It's all being done on a count, right? And there's somebody going 7, 6,
mm-hmm.
5. And I just remember vividly, a lot of folks thought I did well, and I thought, you dumb idiot, how could you get that lyric wrong? It's like saying 'twas the night Christmas before. But anyway, it was good. It was a great experience.
Amazing television,
part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find you still get nervous in moments like that,
no,
after
not
all
so
these
much
years?
Nervous, Carolyn, as you're just ultra-focused,
mm-hmm.
and... No, I knock on wood, right? Because the minute that's bad karma to even suggest that you don't get nervous. But I truly have come to understand, again, that's why I was glad I went to the show in Victoria. To get out of yourself is the magic, right? To not make it about yourself. I genuinely was standing there in Rio de Janeiro thinking, what in God's name can I do to make this nice for the tragically hip? Wasn't how in the world can I look good? And that takes a long time to get to that. You know, you're fighting your way up the career ladder. You're fighting luckily, I've really found that social media, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down in the Twitterverse or whatever, has not fazed me one way or the other, because I often wonder if I was young and starting out, if in addition to newspapers writing about you, and in addition to scrambling to get a job and, you know, make a name for yourself, if you had that extra pressure, how would you do? I mean, I barely survived the anxiety attacks I suffered early in my career. I'm not sure I would have made it through social media, but it doesn't seem to affect me at all in my later career, and I think that's just a product of having been there long enough that you don't feel the need to prove yourself.
Do you think back on those early days often when you're at the desk on a Saturday night or up on stage introducing the Tragically Hip? Do you think back to those days reporting weather or early on at hockey night?
Well, I've always sort of looked at it, Carolyn, in the sense that I felt it was as important doing the weather in Red Deer as introducing the Hip at the Rio Olympics. I really do feel your work is your definition, not your job. Mm. You know, so I've never felt differently about the pressures, the joys. It's obviously never about the money, even though at some point you have to ask for that to live in a bigger market and so on. But it was always the same. The sensations around the job were the same. The only thing that you can't help but notice is when they promote the Coach's Corner and show clips of you 32 years ago and you have some hair, it's dark. I mean, those are moments that, you know, my sort of facing death is on TV just about every night. You know, there's a mortality on the screen right there in front of you that is, you know, separate from my work condition. It's just kind of weird to see, oh my God, I'm 57. You know, and I read about how Bruce Springsteen went into depression at 60, and you can see why, right? It's not easy growing old, and that's the one thing I do think about when I'm working.
It's amazing Don hasn't got into those video libraries, because you showed that old Bridgestone Tires ad with him wandering into the tire shop, and I'm thinking he should have Bridgestones already if he's the spokesman, but he's you know, he's doing what the commercial tells him to, and he probably can't do anything to stop. He loves that those are aired, but it's a different Don Cherry when we see Don Cherry in a commercial in 1986, isn't it?
And for him, though, Greg, it's all about Blue, his beloved Bull Terrier. So for him to see that was just, you know, again, Don's going to be 84 in February, so you know, we talk a lot about what the future holds, and you know, for him to get Blue on there was just gold. He you know, his favorite song is Stevie Wonder's "You Are the Sunshine of My Life," and that was Blue's song. And he went through, you know, the really tough period in Colorado. He had two things happen. He had his son Tim was failing kidneys, so Cindy, his daughter, had to donate one of her kidneys to save Tim's life. And Don barely was able to cope with that. He was a chicken in the hospital. And then he had, of course, the fact that his career was coming to from you know, the highest of highs, you know, Don Cherry and the Big Bad Bruins, the Lunch Pail Bruins, to the Colorado Rockies, to done. And now he's on the rubber chicken circuit out, you know, speaking on behalf of Green Cross in Swift Current, and tomorrow Weyburn, and the next day North Battleford. And it's like, wow, you know. So he went through all of that when he had his Bull Terrier Blue. So when she pops up, although I have to tell you, that's not actual Blue in the commercial. The dog was fantastic in the ad, but so there was a magic to that for sure for us.
Tell me about your communication, your relationship when things changed for you with hometown hockey and George doing Hockey Night. It was a strange new world for everybody, and I wonder how much was there, because we've always known of Don as being an advocate very much for you and your partnership. People said describe what it's like with an on-air partner, and as you know, it's not a marriage, it's not a father-son thing, it's really like nothing else to spend that much time and that many years together. What was the communication like over the 2 years when you had to jet off on Saturdays, and it ended up feeling this year, and it didn't feel like it felt for the almost 30 years before? What was it like?
It was you know, it's funny, I just said to you, you make your work, not your particular job, your passion. So in a way, I kind of wandered through it happily, blissfully, but I did see what it did to Don. You know, there were times, Greg, when I would jet off to Fort McMurray or to maybe Cornerbrook, Newfoundland, some of the venues that we just couldn't get there easily, so it made more sense for me to be already up in town on a Saturday night, and Tara wasn't yet co-hosting. Mm-hmm. The first year we did the show, we had two or three broadcasters. Carolyn, you came on it when Tara was by now kind of settling in, but she wasn't really technically co-hosting. So it was really imperative that I be there for the show. And then eventually, you know, with Tara now co-hosting, you've got that sort of luxury of, although I find this travel stress, you know, nonetheless, you know, the fact that I'm kind of trying to make it. And as far as Don and me, he understood. He was frustrated. I mean, they initially kept us to 5 minutes. They really were, you know, it's almost like they were to phase Don out, getting rid of me first, and that would, you know, kind of be the way to frustrate him to saying enough is enough, because they were trying to change things. It was a new group, and, you know, to control the show, to control the identity or the brand of the show, Don's got to go, right? Don is the show right now. He's as integral as the music ever was. So I think that was their. I think it was a bit of a mistake, but I understand why. You know, when they were going to this new idea of distribution television versus destination television, they were going to be telling you to go up and down the dial.
Yeah,
intermissions were almost going to be less significant than they'd been in the past. But that never works. It's like I know from my experience in radio when the Drake format came along and it was all about less talk, more rock. It worked to a point, but eventually people put on a CD or an 8-track tape. They don't worry about they want companionship. They want some healthy interaction with somebody giving them context. And that's what Don has always done for the show. And he represents, obviously, 9 decades. He represents a guy that knows Eddie Shore, Doug Harvey. It's just unbelievably valuable to have that in our mix. So, you know, I it was tough for him because he saw that, you know, they were kind of eventually trying to phase him out. And we worked through it, though. That's what you do. You go through the hardships, and, you know, you've been there, Greg. You just have to plod on and, as I say, love the craft, and you'll make it.
With so many years working with Don and the evolution of your relationship, because at first, when you first started out with them, as I think he said in his words, he wanted you to toughen up and fight back against him more. At this stage, do you feel differently about him, even maybe in a more sentimental way or protective way?
Yeah, but I always did. You know, I admired him greatly, Carolyn, from the get-go. I remember being at Northlands Coliseum, they called the rink in Edmonton in the day. Before I started broadcasting hockey, it was 1980, I went to a Leafs Oilers game, and I was so thrilled to see Don Cherry and Dave Hodge in the lower corridor. I thought he was great on television, as I thought many of their personalities were, including Dave, of course. So I felt a responsibility to help them shine. You know, Wayne Berry, the guy that taught me at CKRD in Red Deer, that was his favorite saying, let your guest be the star. And he said, you know, if you make that person look good, you will by extension look good, and that's all that you want. So I was schooled in that a little bit, and I do believe it. So I always felt protective of Don, and they would be after me to sort of tell him what to think and how to be, and, you know, his right-wing politics. He was edgy in a day when it wasn't so the norm. Now, again, through social media, having an edge is commonplace. Podcasts, there's a million directions you can go to find edge. But in the day where there was primarily a bunch of woodpeckers, it was weird to have a lumberjack on the air. And I loved it. I wanted it to be that way. I would work to carefully cultivate what it was Don had on his mind, not what I had on his mind. And then once in a while I realized, well, we can't both just go with what Don thinks all the time. We have to represent the viewer's interests. So that became an issue for me all through my career, is trying to identify the right mix of that. And certainly when I'd interview Gary Bettman, you know, I was trying to think of the viewer. And then you had your bosses saying, well, yeah, but think of the brand. Think of the corporate relationship. You know, you had all these things. If it was CBC, it was a government pressure. You know, you were at arm's length from the government and you had to be ethical. If it was a private enterprise, it was the mighty dollar kind of getting in there and telling you, hey, be careful. So you idealistically always say you work for the viewer. You do not work for Rogers or CBC. But of course, I found myself in Fort McMurray suddenly.
Ron McLean, yeah, exactly. Ron McLean's our guest. It's Carolyn Cameron, Greg Brady on the Point Taken podcast. We'll get to some hockey in a sec, but the broadcasting stuff's great. Our listeners love that stuff. I'd ask you about, do you feel a radio guy at heart that got into television and just it went well and there was no turning back? Your career ebb and flow, Ron, kind of missed the whole sports talk movement. Would you have, you've done Stanley Cup, you've done Olympics, you've done it all. Would you have enjoyed the daily machinations of a 3 or 4 hour show, do you think?
I actually did a sports show on Sunday nights at CKRD in Red Deer. It was called Sports Talk, and it was
good name.
and the opening was Jay Giles' band, Freeze Frame. That was the music I would use, and I would cut all the sound bites of, you know, what was going to be the content on the show, the guests on the show that night. And I did it for, 1982, 83, somewhere in there for just over a year, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I mean, I did the Red Deer Rustler broadcasting, you name it, Craig. I did it all until I left for Channels 2 and 7 in Calgary to host the Flames games. But I did miss, you know, and I patterned sort of my approach to the business. Even when I was a DJ at CKRD, I would do the different shifts. But when I got to be the 9 to noon was kind of my shift that I settled into. I did a lot of interviewing. I interviewed Senator Keith Davey, Senator Iona Campanola. I interviewed John McCauley, the refereeing director of officiating for the NHL. I would have guests on all through the broadcast. I wouldn't just play songs. And I patterned it after a guy, maybe before your time, but Peter Zosky of CBC. Mm-hmm. He had Morningside, a nice show on the CBC that was a magazine-style. It was basically a show about Canadians reflecting themselves to one another. And obviously, ironically, all these years later, I end up on Hometown Hockey doing that kind of work. So that was the show I dreamt of for Red Deer. And it's, thank God, the show that I ended up getting a chance to do later on. Mm-hmm.
And you think of Canada Day coming up and the 150th, and you've been so many places across this country, and that's what Hometown Hockey is about. Do you have maybe a moment that you'll think of most this Canada Day, the most Canadiana Ron McLean moment?
Well, I had a funny moment. I was in Croatia when Croatia joined the European Common Market 3 years ago, and we put big Canadian flags out because it was July 1st that they joined the market, and we put big Canadian flags on the balcony of a buddy's house in Split, Croatia, to represent Canada Day. But everybody in Croatia thought Canada had joined the European Common Market. They were all excited. I'll think about that. I'll think about actually my favorite Canada Day. I've done Parliament Hill, the show, a few times. I've done it with Queen Elizabeth. But I remember being coming off the Stanley Cup playoffs and going down to a boat on 16 Mile Creek in Oakville. And Larry Kane paddled by. He's our gold medalist in canoe from the 84 Olympics, also won a silver. Just a great, he was the guy that taught Adam Van Cooverden, and Adam Van Cooverden taught Mark Oldershaw. Mm-hmm. And before that, a guy named John Wood taught all three of them. So there's a great tradition of paddling down in Oakville. So Larry comes by, and he goes racing back down to the club that he belongs to, Burloak, and then comes back to this boat we're on, and he's got a disc, a CD of all Canadian bands. And we sat and just, you know, what happens next? You listen to music and drink beer till you can't remember. And that's my favorite Canada Day of all. So if I was to do it upright, that would be the way.
Do you feel the same about the Olympics as you might have, I wouldn't even say when you're a kid, Ron, maybe 20 years ago? When I'm a kid, it's, you know, this, where Jimmy Carter's organizing the Moscow boycott, the Soviet bloc doesn't come to Los Angeles. So it's political, and then Sarajevo's got its whole own set of traps. So it's very political early on, but you'd lose it for those 2-3 weeks, and there's a sense of idealism about it. Do you look at it now, and you go, so corporate, and the bids and the maybe some of the under the table dealings to get even Qatar with the World Cup? Do you look and say it's not just sport anymore, or has it always been that way?
Well, it has, and it has always been hijacked by winning. And winning is deadly because winning involves drugs or whatever else it takes to cheat and get that gold medal and get the money that might come your way if you win. So winning is one of the ways it's hijacked, and that's what you got to be very concerned to think about. It's been hijacked by politics, as you say. It's been hijacked by corporatism, for sure. Been hijacked a lot of different ways. But in the end, it's just such a great example of all of us doing something together. That's what I love. I always say, you know, it's tough on an athlete to say, well, you should carry your flag to show that you're one of 212 countries. You don't know what an honor that is. But on the other hand, if they got to compete the next day, I understand. You know, Alex Bauman did it. He carried the flag in Los Angeles and then went out and swam the next day, and that was in blistering heat on concrete. It was brutal, but he did it, and he won the next day. Having said that, I fully understand why an athlete would want to save their legs, save their body for their performance. But that's to me, you know, I'm not big on nationalism. Greg, when I hosted in Sochi, the Winter Olympics, I did the primetime shift, and we did 17 days of coverage, including the opening ceremony. And we did not show the medal standings once, not once on that broadcast. Shirelli Najak was the producer who was complicit in our little plan to keep nationalism out of the thing. I certainly celebrated the number of gold medals Canada won and so forth, but I didn't want it to be Canada vis-a-vis Germany, vis-a-vis Holland, Russia, U.S. I didn't want that comparable. I didn't want it to be about us against the world. I wanted us to be with the world, always. That's what the Olympics is for me. It's, you know, the greatest thing. Canada is kind of one of the last nations on earth to be settled. We watched all the mistakes of nationalism made, and then we got into our own, but still, you know, it is a great 16-day example. So is the World Cup of Soccer. Any of these global gatherings are very important when you see people coexist. It's just great message.
Do you find that a big importance on hockey night too, is not just focusing on the six Canadian teams, but just focusing on Canadian talent across the board and telling those stories as well? Because, I mean, in this country, we obviously get so caught up in our team.
Yeah.
Locally.
Well, here's the tricky thing there, Carolyn, is that, you know, when I see Don, let's say it's very unfair. They're bringing, you know, Europeans into the CHL or into minor midget hockey in Ontario and taking your kids' jobs. And I agree and I understand. And I know that Switzerland once had a great program and they lost it because of imports. But I culturally feel bad about sacrificing that exchange. I like it, you know, where Jacob Voracek was a Halifax Moosehead or Nico Hischier was a Halifax Moosehead. And all these guys playing on the Mooseheads got to experience another culture. Mm. I think that's invaluable. I think, you know, when you go back to 72 in the Summit Series and it was Paul Henderson and Phil Esposito and Yvonne Cornoyer and Serge Savard were kind of four of the key guys. They represented the two solitudes, French and English, at a time when it was absolutely going off. FLQ crisis had just happened. It was just great to see us together. You know, and that's why Team North America became fascinating in the World Cup of hockey. Nobody expected that to work, but the Americans and Canadians somehow coexisted. I know when I do the rodeo every year, the Calgary Stampede, the Cowboys hate it when you bring up what country they're from, because a cowboy isn't from any country. A cowboy is from a spirit, you know, is from a place within your head, a way of life. I always am trying to message that way, is really carefully avoid we're Hockey Night in Canada. But I'm grateful. I just read a great book by Lyndon McIntyre called Why Men Lie. And in the book, somebody says, well, I never thought of nationalism as an asset. And he said, well, that's because your nationality perhaps wasn't a liability.
Yeah.
And that was good. It was well said, you know. So I'm grateful for Canada. And there is a lot of reasons to tout Canada and some of the things we've done. But we're not perfect. We know that. And that's where Gord Downie, the tragically hip, never sang Canadiana from the point of view of aren't we great, beating his chest. He always sang Canadiana from the point of aren't we stupid, can't we improve? Mm. Not stupid's overstating it, but you know, we could be better. He was great to recognize that.
Do you feel do we have a generation gap now with international hockey and the appreciation for it? I mean, those that I'm too young for 72, but I'm right in those great Canada Cup wheelhouses. So 84, 87 is my 72, I explain to people. But,
yeah.
But Ron, I find people who are in their 20s now, there's nothing fascinating about European players playing, whereas you and I would remember.
Yeah, we had a Cold War, Greg.
Yeah,
I mean, we didn't
so,
get to see Red Army until they suited up at Cops Coliseum. Or
yeah, so even how Boris Salming was treated,
yeah.
So there's Larionov and Krutov to Vancouver, Fedosov and Sterikov to in Kazatov to New Jersey. They just come and it's full of great European players. So that mystery and that excitement, and then Canada, even in the Olympics, Ron, it was like we waited forever, then they won. And then, okay, one year they didn't win, then they won the next two. Like that eliminates a little bit of the drama of it. Do you find that generation gap is there with just loving it and craving it?
Well, it'll never be the same as when there was a bit of mystery. It's like cameras in the dressing room, right? Great, but, you know, the dressing room will never be the same as it was when we imagined it in our own mind. So that's lost a little bit, and for sure the styles, the secrets, there was so much went into it. I mean, in 72, it was true Cold War. By 87, there was rumblings of perestroika and glasnost, and the walls were coming down, but it was still there, and we wanted to compare notes, and we wanted to compare, you know, our best against theirs, and yet I still feel you know, Canada's done a wonderful job of amassing a couple of good teams here in 2014 and 2010, but they were life and death to make it in Vancouver, right? The Americans tied it, and now it's anybody's game. I felt in Sochi, Canada had a domineering performance. I just love it. You know, I just like the... I hate nationalism, but I like the fact that now the difference is you have Port Moody and Coquitlam and Red Deer and Moose Jaw. That's the part I like. You know, once again, it's a blending, and I got to be careful because it sounds like, you know, communism or fascism or communism. I do like the idea, though, of you know, pollination, cross-pollination, and it's another neat example of it when it happens.
Isn't that, though, then for this generation when, and I'm kind of part of this generation, the tail end, where we remember 2002 Salt Lake, if you think of international hockey, and then Vancouver. Isn't this when you need the Patrick Laines against the Connor McDavids, against the Austin Matthews in the Olympics?
Oh, of course. It's just a disaster that they're not going to Korea. But Again, that I don't. I honestly haven't written that one off, Carolyn.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that there isn't going to be a resolution to that. I'll be stunned if they don't go. I just think I understand why it's an irritant to some of the owners, but I don't see how it's in their best interest to take that away from the players. Players like it, fans like it. I don't think it's prudent. I really don't. So. I'll be surprised if there isn't a resolution. I think it's a very important. I don't know if it's the great marketing vehicle that everybody thinks it is, but it just makes you feel good about the sport. And baseballs, what does it do? Nothing, right? So there's probably an element. That's the World Cup I'm talking about, in baseball or mm-hmm. whatever they call that. I think in hockey terms. Sidney Crosby, honestly, he kind of was vacant there for a few years. That Sochi performance, I think, really was a big part of why he is so dominant now. And he was great at 2015 in the World Championship in Prague, and he was great in the last two Stanley Cups. So I think when we go back and assess Sidney Crosby, when all said and done, his Olympic performances will be as vital to the grade as anything he ever did.
Ron McLean's our guest. A couple more questions. I'll explain. I explained to my kids about the Leafs, and I want to get your read on it. They're 11-9 and really diving into the players now, who they are, who they play with. And I said, this is the most unique I think people have felt about Toronto. Even, I'd say it's late 70s, Ron, where you're watching a young core, Sitler, McDonald, Salming, Turnbull, Palmentier, and they're exciting. But the late 90s teams, those were almost hired gun teams. Like, I know Cujo wanted to be here, and Roberts wanted to be here, but it was a lot of shuttling out draft picks, which they later paid for to get those veteran future Hall of Famers, the Leeches, the Francises. I don't know that there's ever been, and it's happened so quickly, like a lightning bolt, that there's been that level. And they captivated young people. When you guys would throw to games in that first round in Maple Leaf Square, it's 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds. And so for those of us who said, hockey and the demographics, you just needed the Leafs to be good again to test it out in Toronto, right?
I think the late 70s teams of Sitler, McDonald, Turnbull were excellent. I think the mid-80s teams with the Hound line, John Brophy's boys, were excellent. I agree with you. The 90s team was kind of a who's who and very, very good. 2002, all through that window, they were a very good team under Pat Quinn. What I think, Greg, has happened is that the game has changed so dramatically. After the lockout in 2004-05, Brendan Shanahan's summit, I realize it seems like there's a little more obstruction creeping back into the game, and I like a little battle in the game, so I'm not going to besmirch that. But I think the game, Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine are a different breed of player. They are just faster in every way and shape, the way they approach the game. They think it quicker. Their hands are incredible. So it's like all of a sudden the young guys, Sidney's only 29, right? He'll turn 30 in August. But these younger guys, McDavid and Matthews, they're playing a different sport. And that's why I think this is so fascinating to all of us. I think it's like, oh, good, aren't we lucky to get the Marner-Matthews thing happening and be a part of it here in Toronto? Because if you don't have that, that's where, poor Vancouver is looking at Henrik and Daniel and saying they're good, but they're in the wrong sport all of a sudden. And that happens to a lot of the players in their 30s now. It just can't happen for them.
So
I think that's neat. I really do.
So Oilers-Leafs finals coming up, right?
Well, Calgary's not too shabby right down the road. They're going to have to get through the Calgary Flames. I really believe Sam Bennett's a hell of a player that hasn't quite emerged yet. They're building a good team, but McDavid's McDavid. He's the Crosby, going forward. And I definitely think a lot of Austin Matthews, so it would be a safe bet for sure, Carolyn.
And there will be somebody will raise a conspiracy theory. But as I said, when I was living in the States at the time, they're coming off a year of not playing, and their first two finals are Carolina, Edmonton, and Anaheim, Ottawa. Really? So you think the league wants those finals the first 2 years out of the lockout? So it tells you whatever happens, happens, right?
It totally does. It's but I like conspiracy theories, so if you've got a good one, Greg, let me know.
Oh, well, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, they get Matthews the 1 year, but of course, had they wanted to rig it, they would have given them McDavid the year before.
Darren Millard, bless his heart, came in and did the draft lottery show, and I just sat and thought, okay, if we're going to pull 22 balls out of this machine, we're going to open 7 envelopes, then we're going to pull another 30 balls out of this machine, open 2 envelopes. I mean, the permutations and the... It would be very easy to write a spy thriller based on the way they do the draft.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about the NBA draft.
That's no, right.
No.
That's a whole other story. Well, Ron, thank you so much for your time. We'll let you get back to your vacation.
Yeah, I loved it, Carolyn. Greg, thanks. Congrats. Yeah, by the way, Carolyn, you'll laugh. During the playoffs, I mentioned star of Point Taken coming up on Sportsnet Central.
Really?
I found out you were going to do the show right after our hockey broadcast, and then I thought, crap, what's the name of the show? Is it Point After or was it Bar? When
I can't
young,
even remember most of the time.
Out west, and I thought, is it the Point After or Point Taken? And I was lucky enough to get my computer code entered, get your email, and find out the name of the show to give you a plug. But all the best, and it was a treat.
Thank you. Your check is in the mail.
Okay.
Yeah. Enjoy a quieter summer than usual. We certainly compared to last summer. We can't thank you enough, Ron. Thanks.
My pleasure, Greg. Yeah, thanks. See you, Carolyn. Bye-bye.
Bye, Ron.
Take care.
He can remember everything. I'm in shock that he has all these stories and he never loses a beat. I can hardly remember what I ate for breakfast yesterday.
He told us he screwed up a really obscure, tragically hip lyric. I mean, they've only got like 400 songs.
I know.
So, and on live television, surrounded by Olympians with a two-hour satellite delay from Rio de Janeiro, he screwed up big time.
I don't know.
It's amazing they let him back.
I don't know if you find too, but I find one of the hardest things in TV and radio, especially if it's, I mean, you work early mornings and I'm late at night. So when you're tired and your mind's not fresh, is sometimes recall and thinking of that word and it being kind of on the tip of your tongue, but you're not able to get the thoughts
out. Yeah,
it is. And yet he does it on live TV constantly when you're on TV for hours in front of millions of people. Actually, I played a board game in Vancouver and I learned a new word. There is a word for not remembering a word. It's anomia.
Anomia?
Anomia. It's so when you have trouble recalling a word or finding a word.
You can't get medication for that. You can't be like, if anomia lasts for more than 4 hours, see your doctor. You
actually,
can't get
if someone
that.
Has one, please call us. The issue is remembering.
We're not doing open phone lines, are we?
Oh,
the format may have changed. Call us
the
immediately.
But what if you have anomia?
On our cell phones.
What if you have anomia thinking of the word anomia?
It's a double,
then you're
yeah.
Just screwed.
It feels oxymoronic in a way. I'll tell you really quick something Ron did. I first met him in person. He started doing, and this was 1994 or 5, he started doing these campus tours. So he was coming to University of Western Ontario, and he's speaking at the Spoke.
Great school.
Fantastic.
Great bar.
So you know where the Spoke is.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming. I used to DJ there. He's coming to the Spoke to do like, hey, come, you know, have beers and watch. It was just Ron would get on stage, tell stories, take questions, and people went, and he was probably the last 90 minutes. Now I found out he got a decent amount of money for this, so I'm like, what's in it for him? Oh, that's good, like, because it was rewarding. But people bought, we all probably bought tickets for, like, $12? Mm-hmm. Like, that's, we're students.
And you're students, yeah.
Yeah, so every penny counts. And we're like, of course we'd spend $12 to watch. And Ron got, like, a Molson product, uncorked it, brought it on stage, and just started wandering around like a stand-up comedian would. But he had... It had such flow and rhythm. Now, we did an interview for him for the radio station prior to that. And then Ron, another guy I was working with, it was named Scott. So he gets on stage, and this happened so fast before he got out on stage. And then 48 minutes into his thing, and he's like, and I was telling Greg and Scott backstage, and you're like, oh, my God.
I know.
Like, I'm a fourth-year student volunteering at a campus station, and he just referenced me by a first name. And it's one of the biggest, most iconic broadcasters in your country and of 32 million people, and you're just blown away. And I never forgot that.
No, he remembers things, but he also remembers the important things and knows how to make people feel special. Because it's like any time you meet anyone, if you can remember their name.
And are you good with names? Because
no,
I'm about
not.
A 4 out of 10.
I'm
a
awful
guy
with
at the
names.
Gym met me the other day. Said, are you Brady? Told me his name, and I had absolutely forgotten it about 20 seconds after the conversation started. Because at first he was like, I almost felt like you never have these confrontations or conversations with people. They're so nice when they meet you in person. He's like, yeah, I disagree with a lot of what you say. And I think at that point I forgot his name. I'm like, oh no.
You're like, listen, buddy.
Am I getting a kettlebell to the sternum because he doesn't like my opinion on Morgan Riley or something, isn't even all that controversial? I'm about to get it. But he was super nice. But like I said, the name literally in one out ear, out
yes,
the other after 15
I think
seconds.
I black out when I shake someone's hand and they say their name. We should have asked Ron what his secret is. You're supposed to repeat their name. So if, say, your name's Ryan, you say, hi, nice to meet you, Ryan. But I don't remember to do that.
But you set other people up, too. So if you and I, if
oh,
someone
yeah.
comes up to you
I'm
and I.
I'm good at doing that.
I think it's like,
great to see you. Have you met Greg?
They based an entire Seinfeld episode around that where Jerry couldn't remember.
Yeah.
I think he started dating a girl and couldn't remember his name. So he kept introducing her to like Kramer and Elaine. And I might have that plot completely and utterly backwards. But it was great having Ron on. And as you said, I think we'll get more we're starting to get into that, what are we, about 10, 11 days away from Canada Day, and that whole 150 thing. My sister, I saw on the weekend, who lives in Ottawa, works right near the Parliament buildings, and she said it's getting to be a bit of a Zootopia near the Parliament buildings. And I think we've sort of under the 150th anniversary of our entire country is kind of creeping up on us very slowly, but we'll talk a lot about, I'm sure we will on the air, you guys, I'm sure on TV will run vignettes and great moments. Like I thought he mentioned Donovan Bailey winning because he was front and center in Atlanta when Bailey won. And on Bailey and obviously Johnson winning in Seoul, those are both touch point moments for me where I remember exactly where I was. And then even finding out that that Ben Johnson had cheated and been stripped of the gold medal, I remember that as well. Obviously.
That's why hometown hockey fits so well with Ron, because he loves going into the smaller towns and the different parts of Canada. And even in those towns and cities, he has stories. You know, someone, there's always a connection. And I was lucky enough, when I was living in Vancouver, I went to, I believe it was the hometown hockey in Abbotsford. And that is one of the times I was, I don't know if I've ever been so nervous on air, because you're sitting next to Ron and you're just thinking, please do not screw this up. Do not screw this up. But then he has a way of just making you feel very comfortable and making you forget that you're on air.
Yeah.
But he's so good at the hometown hockey and going across the country. What a way to see the country, too.
What a way to see the country. But he's gotten to be an expert flyer. He can't have a phobia of flying after what the last 3 years. I'm sure there've been some tiny airplanes.
Ooh, turbulence.
Getting to tiny airports. I don't like small planes, and I don't like small. I like smaller airports even less.
I don't like
even
turbulence.
Even though you can get through them.
I'm that person who grabs the random stranger next to me when there's turbulence.
Have you ever flown out of Hamilton?
No.
Small airport.
I flew out of London.
Even smaller.
London's pretty small.
London is really, really small. So is Windsor. There you go. We've got some small airport experience. Wonderful.
Just listing them off.
Small airport stories for people.
Is it time for What Up With That?
We can, because we missed it last week. And nobody picked up your slack in doing your favorite
JD
segment without
comes
you here.
Unprepared. Yeah, really, I spent hours. I stay up all night finding these stories.
He had a lot of bad NBA opinions and no cool stories about things and sharks and, well, we already teased that.
Okay. So let's start with that one.
Okay.
So for Shark Week, Michael Phelps, 23 Olympic gold medals to his name, 39 world records, is going to race a shark. To me, this is just a disaster waiting to happen. And I don't mean in terms of safety. I believe everything will be very safe.
The lanes will be cordoned off nicely.
I would assume that's in the contract, or else it would not be insured. But does this just not seem so gimmicky?
Well, what does the winner get? And I would assume the shark gets something different than Phelps.
The shark probably gets food. I mean, a shark swims to eat. It swims to survive. This is ridiculous. People are all excited about it. I just think it's too much.
Do you have a fascination? And I wonder if this is like, Jaws was a big seminal movie and when I was very small and little, and I still watch it when it comes on. I feel like I'm way more fascinated with a shark than the average person. I'm way more afraid of him.
Yes.
Also, my kids and I swam at Coney Island. We went to Coney Island when we were in New York 2 summers ago. And they have giant beach there right by the theme park. So you took a couple hours off and you're swimming in the Atlantic Ocean. And all I could think about was like looking around, like you're in knee deep water and I'm looking for great white sharks or sand sharks or hammerhead sharks.
I do get nervous because if I go on vacation, I usually try and surf when I'm on vacation. And that's the exact phrase.
That's braver than me
already. I try and surf. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm good at surfing, but I try and surf. And I think the first time I tried it was when I was about 10. And I get nervous when you're out very far and you're by yourself, even though you have people watching from land. And you think, if it comes and gets me, I am toast.
Do you deep sea dive? Because that's something
I'm never doing that.
Why? Okay,
no,
so why?
There's no way.
What are you worried about? Like a stingray or an eel of some kind?
I don't like really deep water. Sorry, I'm cringing. I don't like very deep water, and you don't know what's down there.
But that's more than... So yes, it's only the unknown, not the known, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the unknown.
Yeah, like a ray of some sort will...
I like snorkeling. I have no desire to deep sea dive. No thanks.
That feels almost the same. The snorkel.
No, snorkeling, you're in shallow water and it's coral and, ooh, look at the fishy and
I do like the feel of salt water on your body and your face, but there's that inherent risk. My kids are like this all the time. Fresh water. Where are we? Fresh water or salt water? And I told them Coney Island was fresh water just to alleviate their fears. Like if something brushed past their leg, I'm like, that's just garbage. That's not a shark fin. one way or the other.
Just punch the shark in the face, in the nose, right? That's how you're supposed to do it?
Best
of luck to Michael Phelps. That's all I'm saying.
You'd be a hero for life. So, speaking of animals, I saw this. And you, right now, you are not a pet owner?
No.
In downtown Toronto? Would you?
No,
my
family members have dogs, though, so I consider them my own.
Have you considered adding to your family?
No.
Our friend Andrew Walker has many cats of various lengths.
Doesn't he have about 30 cats? He's a cat man.
He's a cat man.
He tweets pictures of his cats.
So in Cleveland, not only are they dealing with losing the NBA Finals, but a woman lost her tortoise.
Uh-huh.
So Otis, the California desert tortoise. Now this is
how do these stories get out there?
An AP reporter is taking this woman at face value. But listen to this. Otis managed to push open a sliding glass door. Right away, I'm calling BS, and I think Kathy Heisinger left the door open. And the tortoise just was like, wow, free outside
slow
time,
news
I'm gone.
Day, eh?
So she put up flyers. Like, if you saw a flyer with a $200 reward for a missing tortoise downtown in the fancy neighborhood you live in, you'd be like, this is a joke. There's not a tortoise wandering around.
Was there a picture,
shopping
too?
Or getting lattes.
Was there a picture just in case you confuse it with another tortoise that could be on the loose?
So a guy found it 20 miles away and took it home for his kids. And then he saw the ad, and he's like, okay, kids, we can't keep this. I feel bad keeping this tortoise. We can't keep this tortoise.
But he took the money.
He won the reward. What's the line for you on, like,
pets?
Oh, that's a weird pet. Dogs and cats are the obvious. Like, this is like a Family Feud top five answers on the board. Dogs, cats, fish are all, turtles even, small ones, are all totally acceptable.
I've only had a childhood dog. My parents have a dog now. And I had a fish in university. His name was Charlie. He didn't last very long.
He had
a disease.
Like what kind of, but this is bigger than a goldfish. This is.
No, actually smaller than, about the size of a goldfish.
And he
had a very small
solo?
Home.
Then he died of loneliness.
Well, there was no autopsy. But
no, I
wouldn't get, I honestly, the only thing I would ever want to have as a pet is really a dog or a fish, but I don't think I'd ever get a fish again. Only a dog.
So
I don't like cats.
I'll test, I love cats, God.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
But they
have
don't really care that you're home.
They do. They come, they know they're getting food. The food,
you come with the food. Exactly. So my point stands.
Yeah, but people come with conversation and physical things, and if those suddenly disappear, if my wife said, I'm never touching you again or talking to you again, that's not much of a marriage. So the cat understands that in the contract
is
feeding them.
That is an awful argument.
Well, it'd be awful for her to do that to me, or vice versa.
Okay.
This is how people get divorced.
Yeah.
A girl I knew had a ferret.
No, I don't like ferrets.
But not liking them and thinking it's a totally weird thing to have.
No, you can have a
ferret.
Because
I don't like hamsters. And I know they seem cuddly.
No.
I don't want one or guinea pig running around the house. Or bunnies. The bunny's an outside thing.
Yeah, bunnies are cute, I guess. I mean, I just wouldn't have them. I'm fine with other people having them. But if I had a roommate who had a snake, you are no longer
my
roommate.
A friend of mine, Jim, had a roommate whose name was Sean. This is true. I was thinking Scott, but it's Sean. And he bought. So they start living together in a big house at university. People do that. And there's six of them, six guys.
No.
And he comes home, I think, one weekend. And Sean has set up a glass case with a boa constrictor in his room.
A glass case of terror? Is that what?
So can you imagine,
like,
it's one thing to bring, okay, we don't like that guy's girlfriend or boyfriend. You know, he's messy in the shower.
Right.
He used my conditioner. No, there's a boa constrictor in a 2,800 square foot house.
No.
Right.
Ugh.
I don't think women even like snakes.
That's a generalization.
No,
some people love snakes.
I bet you. If you did percentages, the people who buy snakes, it's 94-6 men to women. It's that pronounced.
I know.
Oh, God.
Generalization.
How will we ever find this stat?
Yeah, we'll have a Twitter poll. Those polls are very
Well, people
effective.
Might like you better than me, and they'll vote for women buy snakes just
no,
as frequently
like
as men.
I don't, like
I don't think you believe that.
Okay, so there's this guy named Zach Campbell, a huge baseball fan, collects a ton of baseballs. They call him a ball hawk. You've probably seen him at games if you watch a lot of MLB games. He's over 9,000 balls he's collected.
My
he
God.
Has Mike Trout's first ever home run. He has Alex Rodriguez's 3,000th hit. And so you might find him kind of annoying, depending on what you find annoying, because he's that guy who gets every single ball. And there's kids who want balls. So at the Dodgers game on Sunday on Father's Day, he asked Clayton Kershaw, because he was down by the diamond, he asked him for a Father's Day ball. And Kershaw said, no, buddy, you've got enough. You've got like 7,000 balls. And he said, no.
So he recognized him for what he was.
He knew it was Zach Campbell. And Kershaw said, you're not gonna appreciate it. You're not going to love it. And he said, yes, I will. And he's like, no way. Get out of here.
That was his argument. Yes, I will.
But
you're wrong.
At what point collecting things is fun, but at what point does it get a little...
Well, not just that. Are you an autograph seeker in the least? Are you interested in autographs?
No, and I think now it's become... I think autographs, I don't want to say they're obsolete, but I don't think they're as big a deal now as pictures are to people. I do like getting, though, if I go to different tennis tournaments or different, say, ballparks, I do like to somehow, if I can, get a ball.
Okay. Yeah, something...
I have not a lot of sports memorabilia. It takes up a couple... shelves on my IKEA bookcase. It's not like it's some room.
Yeah, I get a mug. Or like the Super Bowl. The last Super Bowl I was at too was San Francisco, and that was the 50th, the Peyton Manning last game. And I got a Super Bowl 50 football for like $30.
Oh yeah.
But that's that tells me that I went there, and maybe people. But it's a little bit like that guy that goes to the concert and wears the concert T-shirt the next day and gets asked about it. I think we've mentioned that before. Like,
yeah.
There is a little bit of, ask me about this. The autograph thing strikes me as, A, either just for profit, and you're going to sell them later. This is why most athletes now will say, who do you want me to make it out to? And if they say, oh, don't, they'll insist on you writing.
Yep.
I would have to say, to Carolyn, best of luck always. I'm not just signing like Sidney Crosby. I'm signing... To Greg, have a great Sunday, because then you've screwed up my ability to sell it. I can just show it off, which is the whole point.
For me, too, I collect press passes. So I think I have every press pass even since I was in school at Western Fanshawe.
That is very collectible item. So people like Kershaw's approach to this. I guess more athletes would follow suit, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't blame Kershaw, though, if he recognizes the guy and he thinks, no, I'm going to give this ball to a kid.
Yeah, that's an utterly reasonable thing to do.
I'm totally okay with it.
The last one I have is I enjoy rock and roll feuds, and I guess this is sort of a pop music feud.
Mm.
But you'd remember the song "Mmm-bop." Did I do that right? By Hanson.
Yeah.
And they it's like almost a 20-year anniversary of them having a hit. So they did an interview in Australia, and we find out they can't stand the Canadian Justin Bieber. So one of the brothers, and again, I can't even tell the brothers apart now. There's three of them. And they all
I'm
look
Googling
different now.
I'm Googling a picture of them from before.
One sang, who is a long-haired one. There was another who was incredibly tall. And there was one that has, like, all I can say is, like, his ears are kind of like my size. Like, they're bigger than average ears. So all that said, they end up going on this Australian show and end up really dissing Justin Bieber. One said, the song that people remember. See, look at production value. I prefer not to get any venereal diseases, so whenever Justin Bieber gets near me or near my ears, it's just ear infections. They're terrible. So that's, you don't really hear,
ouch,
like...
They're doing that just to get talked about.
And look who's talking about them. So now we remember that Hanson is still around, and which is...
Now this song will be stuck in my head the whole time.
It's going to be there for...
Listen, the thing with Justin Bieber, I don't hate to admit it. I do actually enjoy a lot of his music. It's catchy.
Yeah.
Do I like him as a person? Well, it's not really important.
He's growing up in front of our eyes, so maybe there'll be some... But I don't ever think we'll ever like revere him like Leonard Cohen or Tom Cochran.
No,
I feel like that ship is sailing far away with the... entourages and the behavior and the tattoos and the limousines and all that stuff.
But I'm sorry, are they thinking that this song that we're listening to right now is one of the greatest songs of all time?
It's a slice of pop heaven. You gotta say
sure,
that.
Sure, but isn't Bieber too?
Yes.
I'm sorry, if Paul McCartney maybe was saying something about Justin Bieber's music.
But you say Hanson cannot, then.
I mean... Yeah.
One of them.
You're basically dissing yourself.
One of them called Bieber's music "Chlamydia of the Ear."
Okay.
So, whatever that medication was, what was the thing where you can't remember a word?
Anomia.
Yeah. So, I don't think that treats chlamydia of the ear.
If you get a
prescription for anomia.
But we're still waiting for the doctor to call in.
Yeah, there is. that may happen at some point in time.
That works on a podcast.
I
think that's good for What Up With That.
And that message would suggest that That's an email from Hanson, or it's from someone else. Well, we enjoyed having Ron McLean on.
Yeah, that was great.
That part in itself was utterly fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's up for you for vacation in the summer? Is there interesting an interesting destination? Vancouver is
no Montreal.
Good
for,
enough.
Montreal for Rogers Cup. I'm not looking to get fit for a family vacation. I'm just living my life, and you know,
not racing a
good
shark
luck, though.
In the water,
not
or,
racing
or
a shark.
Anything like that.
No. But, yeah, I think we're going to have some good episodes coming up this summer.
That seems to be...
And as you said, Canada Day themed and talking about this wonderful country of ours.
That's right. And boa constrictors for roommates.
No, thanks.
And things like that.
No.
Do a show with a snake trainer next week or something like that.
I mean, that'd be cool, but I just don't want the snake to come in.
The snake trainer's got to bring his wares. He can't just come on his own.
Okay, you book that guest.
That's right. Thanks to Ron McLean. We will be revisiting you. Oh, don't forget to check us out on iTunes and
yes.
rate us. Rating is big.
It is?
Even if you give us 3 stars out of 5 and say, this was a C-level podcast presentation.
Well,
we need that rating.
I just told my family and friends I begged them to subscribe. And one of my friends says, now keeps downloading automatically on my phone.
That's good.
I said, yes, thank you.
We're happy to eat up all that data with all this time.
Not my problem.
We'll see you next week.
See ya.
You've been listening to Point Taken with Carolyn Cameron and Greg Brady on sportsnet.ca/590.